I was convinced that I was going to look like Two-Face. I thought that melted wax on your face was like, I've deformed myself.
Hello, welcome to Guides to the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
And this week, we're going to be talking about rituals and games, some that will probably be familiar to you and some that may not be.
Yeah, some of them I definitely knew about, and I for sure learned a few things in my part of the research.
Yeah.
That I thought were amazing. I was going to use the word throwback, but if something is from 400 years ago, is that understating it?
I think it's an understatement.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can throw back Thursday something that happened in like the 1600s.
Exactly. And that's basically exactly when it's from, yeah. One of these things I found, which is amazing. And I really hope maybe we can all start doing this collectively. Rituals are a weird thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you before we dive into these, really, because we're talking about rituals as literally a set of instructions. Do this, then that, then that, then that.
Yeah.
You should get some sort of a paranormal outcome. For some of mine, it might be traveling to another dimension or mm-hmm. summoning a spirit. Some of my question is why? Because also my rituals, I don't know if yours had this as well, my rituals also have the rules to undo it real quick and seem to
no.
be... Oh, no?
No.
Oh, okay. Maybe you have a different experience.
My rituals are a little bit different, though. I really only have one that's like connecting with the beyond or whatever. They're kind of just like strange things that you can do.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a different subset.
Mine, as I were reading them, were almost written as if it's like you're conducting the ritual and you really, really, really wish you hadn't even started.
Okay.
Some of mine are like, I almost had to do digging to even figure out what's scary about them, because they'd be like, then you hide and you close your eyes, don't open your eyes. If you've done everything right, you won't see anything at all.
Oh.
Like, well, then what?
What are we doing here then?
What are we up to, ladies and gentlemen?
That's funny.
But I guess we'll get into it the further that we go. I also want to call out that this topic...
Yeah.
Was decided on our Patreon live stream this
yes.
past Sunday. Every first Sunday of the month, Kristen and I sit down on patreon.com/talkbomb and talk with people who follow the show
mm-hmm.
to get suggestions for topics for future episodes. And
it was awesome.
This overall topic was suggested by Carrie.
Yes. Thank you so much, Carrie. This was a great idea.
Yeah. So the first one that I'm going to talk to you about, Kristen, is the elevator game.
Okay. Good.
Were you familiar with this?
Yes. I'm familiar with it, but I don't know a ton about it.
Okay.
I don't know all the steps and everything.
So the basic concept of this, the why of it all, why you would do the elevator game, why you would play the elevator game, I guess, is that following through the game, the ritual, will bring you to another world.
Okay.
Here's what you'll need. At least one person.
Okay.
Okay. A public building with at least 10 floors,
mm-hmm.
and an elevator. No walk-ups.
Okay.
Here's how you play. It's a little bit of a slog, but it's mm-hmm. important to get all the rules. If any part of this process, by the way, is interrupted, you have to start over from the beginning.
Okay.
So if somebody walks into the elevator that shouldn't be there, is not part of the game, start over. If you're with somebody and they leave the elevator, the whole thing's screwed. You got to start over.
Got to do a clean through.
Exactly. So here's what you do. You're going to get in the elevator on the ground floor, go up to the fourth floor, then go to the second floor, then go to the sixth floor, back to the second floor, way up to the 10th floor, then you go to the fifth floor. Here's what happens if you followed that sequence correctly. Again, that is from 1 to 4 to 2 to 6 to 2 to 10 to 5. There's a possibility that when the doors open on the fifth floor here, a woman will enter the elevator. Do not look at her. Do not speak to, do not talk to her. That woman is not a human. If a lot of this is off the page, you know, I guess if I could offer one critique to whoever's writing the rituals online, this one came to me from hideandgokill.fandom.com. There seems to be,
I think I also used that. It's in the show notes, but I think I also used Hide and Go Kill.
A stupendous resource.
Yeah.
Whoever's writing these is leaving a lot to the imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
That person is not a human, you know?
Like, yeah, like what? So what are they?
Is she a demon or a goat? Like what?
Yeah.
If you do talk to her or look at her, she will decided to keep you for her own.
Oh, God. She made me her baby?
So, yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're mine now.
Yeah.
So, ignoring her fully, now press the button for the first floor again. now that you've pushed the button for the first floor, the elevator is said to either descend or ascend.
Go up. Okay. And we're with this woman in the elevator, right?
Oh, yeah. She's in the elevator with us.
Okay.
If the elevator starts going up to the 10th floor, make sure you leave and do not respond to the woman if she asks, where are you going or what's wrong?
Okay. Look, no problem.
Her voice will be high when she asks that.
Okay.
No, with no further description given to me.
All you need to know is that it's a woman and her voice is high. That equals demon.
Right. Yeah, I guess so.
I will say that gives you slightly more criteria. It could be like, okay, a woman came on, but maybe she's just a woman.
It might just be a person going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But if her voice is not scary high pitched, she's not the demon, I guess. Right. Yeah. If it reaches the first floor, leave and do not look back.
Isn't that the same as the 10th floor?
Correct.
That's okay. All right.
Sussed it
so
out.
Either way, leave and don't look back.
Yes. Now
does this mean I win the elevator game?
Now you are in the other world.
Oh, right.
Electronics will not work in the other world. The other world is identical to our world. But the two differences you will see are all the lights will be off, and the only thing you will be able to see from windows is a red cross in the distance. Getting back to our world may be tricky.
Wait.
No.
The only thing you'll see from windows. Does that mean if you're inside looking out of a window?
Well, presumably you're inside. You just got out of an elevator.
Yeah, but I thought we were talking about like the whole world now as you move through it is going to be this way. All the lights are off.
I guess so, yeah.
And okay.
But presumably nobody's ever left the building, I guess. That's why they phrase it as if you look out the windows.
Okay,
here's
gotcha.
Spoiler alert. I know nothing of Otherworld.
Okay.
I think they just want you to fill in the blanks with your own imagination.
Okay.
So
more than willing.
For me, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
It's absolutely nothing.
Okay, there. That's fine.
So getting back to our world may be tricky. Again, this is written with like the intent of like, well, you've gotten there. Now the only thing to do is just come back. So what was this for?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's just a cheat code. It's just a real life cheat code, right? Somebody just, I guess, for the sake of this game, the elevator game, they just decided or learned that if you go to different floors in an elevator in the proper sequence, you might get, like in a video game,
yeah.
you might, instead of getting like infinite health, you just end up in a weird glitched world.
Right. Okay.
Where all the lights are off and there's this red cross
in the distance.
Which to me implies some sort of like a hellish ritual
yeah.
or hellish belief.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
practicing
something.
Of some sort of a hellish religion.
I guess.
Right. We've all seen the pictures of Oregon this past week where the sky is all red.
Oh my God.
Maybe it transports you to Oregon and
maybe
September 2020. Stay
dumps
safe.
You off. Yes,
everybody,
truly.
And West Coast people.
Yeah.
Too. So anyway, if you're trying to get back to our world and it's seemingly it's the only thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know what else you'd be doing.
You might find yourself in a spot of bother. For you see, you might become disoriented in other world and not be sure which elevator you're supposed to get into. I guess that matters. The elevator might appear to grow further and further away from you as you walk toward it, which is very dreamlike.
Yes.
I actually kind of like that part. And they say, be vigilant. Keep your wits about you.
Okay.
Now here's more of a quote. If at any point during the ritual you faint, pass out, or otherwise lose consciousness, you will likely wake up in your own home.
Everything's going to be fine.
However, be sure to carefully examine your surroundings upon waking. The home to which you have been returned may not be the one you left when you first set out to attempt this ritual.
An other world home?
Other home.
A home sans electricity?
Yeah. Home.
Get me out of here.
Home not so sweet home.
That's right.
So here's how you do return to our world again. You just kind of do the ritual.
Okay.
Again, getting back into that elevator. But now the order you do is, 4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5. When you reach the fifth floor, push the button for the first floor. The elevator might ascend to the 10th floor again. Press any other button to cancel that operation.
Okay.
It's easy peasy. It's as easy as that.
And then you're just in the normal world again?
Yeah. I mean, they do say when you get back to the first floor, check your surroundings carefully if anything seems off.
Then go back in and do it again or something?
Oh, if anything seems off, don't even get out of the elevator.
Oh.
Just repeat that process.
But how are you going to check the world if you're still in the elevator?
Are the lights on?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
If the lights are on, that's a dead giveaway.
It's true.
So that's the ritual in and of itself.
Right.
Now, one of the other fun things about the elevator game is that a million people do it, write about it, and talk about it.
Yeah.
So I watched several videos of people trying the elevator game and freaking out when just like somebody with like, you know, a cup of Coke, like a to-go cup of Coke is like sipping on it with a straw. And they're like, some stranger. It's a
woman who comes in and she's like, nice day.
Yeah.
And they're like,
it's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening. And I found this story from the Thought Catalog.
Okay.
I thought that was like a real website.
I think it is.
Okay.
It was like a Halloween special or something where they were like compiling. I don't think it's not like the Atlantic, you know what I mean? But it's a known website.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is a story written by Anonymous titled, I played the elevator game wrong. I played the elevator game and I did it wrong. The woman followed me back.
Uh-oh.
So a woman got on at the fifth floor, as is meant to be the thing. Now, here's where I started, I should say, part of the reason why I'm even telling you about this story that I found on Thought Catalog, links in the show notes, is that just reading the ritual in and of itself, I just kept going like, who cares?
Yeah.
Right? Why are you doing this?
This isn't particularly exciting.
No, it's not. I know it's a big deal.
Right. Like
a lot of people post this. That's why it's even something for us to talk about here, is that it was recommended and something I have heard about before.
I wonder if it's partially because it's easily accessible. Like, as long as you're in a building that has an elevator, you can play the elevator game. You don't have to assemble a mirror and a lighter and a whatever.
True.
You know?
And, like, elevators already have some weird stuff. Like, I know that, like, in some countries, the number 4 is skipped because 4 is associated with death. I know that here, a lot of the time, the 13th floor is skipped. So elevators already have a sort of a folkloric bent to them.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I read this story from Thought Catalog that I was like, oh, when you dramatize these events, I can see there's something in there. And I think this is what people are hooking on to that I'm not getting by just reading the ritual itself. Maybe I'm just not using my imagination enough to put myself in the footsteps of someone trying to do it, so I'm not really seeing it.
I mean, you could definitely write a cool story around the idea of this, but right. I guess just reading the steps is like, all right.
Yeah. So in this story by Anonymous, a woman does get on the elevator at the fifth floor. And the person's like, I screwed up instantly, because if you're trying to figure out what floor you're on, you have to look up above the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I'm looking up above the door and someone walks in, I accidentally immediately looked at them and turned around.
Yeah.
So like even that, I'm like, oh, right. When you actually think about the circumstances, it's a little different than just reading like the recipe.
Right.
In a sense. And then they start talking about how the woman just goes like, what are you doing? Are you all right?
Why are you turned around?
Yeah. How come you're not talking to me? She started talking about how there had just been an accident on the fifth floor and asked if I would go back with her to help. This was totally nonsensical. She had just gotten on the elevator in the hopes that someone might be there and then go help, which is a great point. But the fact that the person wrote something nonsensical and then called out that it's nonsensical almost gives credibility in a way of like, yes, this is a poor approximation of a demon to try to catch you.
Right, to trick me. Yeah.
Right, you're trying to trick me. Then it gets ridiculous, where it's like the demon starts like, well, first the demon starts going like, what's wrong with you? Why are you have your back turned? Which I'm like, yeah, that would happen. Like, that is what somebody would ask.
Yeah.
But then they start going like, I see you've just determined that I am the demon. Turn and face me. Like things like that. It's just like, oh, this is getting real broad and stupid.
Wow.
Then the person in the elevator says that they were taunted so much, they got so much rage that they lost control and started attacking the woman.
What is this story?
It flew so far off the handle where I was like, it seemed at first like it might have just been a person telling a story of trying a thing that they saw online and were like, eh, that's silly.
That's completely what I thought was happening here, but I guess
really it
was fiction?
I don't really believe it, but maybe I'll try it. And then it turned out to be a fictional story.
Weird.
Yeah. So they attacked the woman, which is already makes me go like, oh, so our narrator is a lunatic. Who gets so angry in public that you can't help
I was
help
so full
to...
of rage when they were asking me these questions.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Rob Zombie levels of logic.
Right.
You know, and horror of like, I smashed her face on the elevator door till blood was flying. It's like, well, it's not scary, and it makes you seem unhinged. And now I'm like, well, why am I even reading what this person thinks and says? So then they realize this is what the woman wanted all along.
Oh my God, to bring out that rage.
She totally manipulated their emotions to get them to act out.
Classic.
And in so doing, they made eye contact and physical contact, and just so the person is theirs. I basically stopped reading the story at this point.
Yeah.
It turns out the person is like trapped in the other dimension. So,
okay.
You know.
Well, it's nice that they had access to the internet from the other world, even though there's no electricity there, and they were able to get this out there.
You're absolutely right.
Maybe
there was a loophole. Yeah. They sort of were like, I guess the notion was like they blacked out. Maybe their rage made them black out. I don't know. It's like a whole subgenre of like horror that is illogical and maybe like dork horror.
Uh-huh.
It's like my rage overtook me and I just lost consciousness. I saw red. It's like, okay. Right. So they woke up in their own bed as mm-hmm. per the ritual goes, but they feel like they are being pulled into the other side. So I think it's that they are writing this and it may already be too late by the time you read it. They're probably already sucked into the other side.
Oh my God. All because of the elevator game.
Exactly. So,
caution to anybody who wants to try that out.
What I'm really saying is the elevator game is rough. But one silver lining is that I found a YouTube video made by John Martinez that I actually found to be really well shot and paced.
Cool.
It is it's like a short horror video. It's like, you know, written and directed. It's a produced piece of media, mm-hmm. YouTube video. It's only got 100,000 some odd views, which is not gigantic in YouTube land. John Martinez only has 500 subscribers, and I really think that they deserve more based off the caliber of this video. So I'm going to have that linked as well.
Great.
For everyone to enjoy. It is like 6 minutes long. Guy gets into an elevator, is told to do the elevator game, don't look at or acknowledge a woman if she walks in. And basically, a woman walks in and starts doing stuff to get his attention, which is... I do love the idea of the demon being like, oh, they know that they're not supposed to turn and look
right,
at me, so
right.
I just got to do stuff. I just have to say things to get that attention.
Yeah.
And then they eventually, like, I'm going to spoil it a little bit.
Okay.
I think it'll be fun in the watching.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the woman is like, all right, well, I haven't gotten his attention. The next time the door is open, she moves to get off and bumps him in the shoulder,
uh-huh.
almost like an aggressive little move. And as she steps off the elevator, she goes, oh, sorry. And he goes, it's okay.
Ooh.
Like the reflex of being polite.
That was a good move on the demon's part.
It was subtle. Like the reflex to be polite and be like, no problem.
Yeah.
Screwed him. And so she steps outside of the elevator and just stands still. And the doors keep sliding closed and opened with her back to him.
This sounds good.
It was great. It's 6 minutes long. I really enjoyed myself. It was very
fun. It.
I've certainly seen plenty of YouTube horror stuff that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much of it.
Yeah.
But I really actually liked this one. And it was like the saving grace of the elevator game. I was like, yes, people with plans and like remixing the story and dramatizing it somehow can really make this, they can make it sing.
Yeah. Make a thing of beauty.
Really enjoyed it. So definitely check out that link if you check out nothing else. The Elevator Game by John Martinez on YouTube.
Cool.
Which brings me to the one that I loved, the ritual that I loved. This one was recommended by Deb. This is the Haya Kumanagatari Kaidanke.
Cool.
It's a Japanese sort of ritual or game. Which I believe it roughly translates to a gathering of 100 supernatural tales.
Okay.
The notion. Well, actually, I should maybe even set this up because this is the throwback I was referring to. This is our throwback Thursday.
Yeah.
To the Edo period, which is between 1603 and 1868.
Quite a throwback.
Hell of a throwback.
It's a strong throw.
Yeah. But it was a popular parlor game where basically... You need 100 lanterns. You need three rooms of a house or a place or whatever.
Okay.
In the furthest room from you, in the third room, you place 100 lanterns, you light them all, and you put a small mirror on a table. You leave the second, the middle room, empty.
Okay.
And in the first room, you are there assembled with all the people that you're spending time with. And at midnight, everyone takes turns telling, quote, ghoulish tales of ghoulish encounters and reciting folkloric tales passed on by villagers who claimed to have experienced supernatural encounters. After each story, the teller then has to get up, venture to the lantern room alone in the dark, go in, and extinguish one of the lanterns. They then have to look at themselves in the small mirror before venturing back alone. So with each story told, another lantern is extinguished, making that room darker and darker until the lantern room is basically pitch black, which is a perfect environment for summoning spirits.
Yeah.
As goes the ritual. The story goes that most people would get too scared to finish, and so they would quit the ritual before they could complete the summoning of spirits in that third room. These tales that they're all telling, the 100 tales, they are known as Kaidan, which is a combination of two kanji. Kai, which means strange, mysterious, rare, or a bewitching apparition, and Don, which means talk. So talk of strange, mysterious things. And it's an old-fashioned term. That is not what you would call a horror story in Japan today. That would be a sort of antiquated term, which to me almost gives it more charm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So this is from the Wikipedia for Kaidan, like old-fashioned ghost stories. Originally based on didactic Buddhist tales, Kaidan often involve elements of karma and especially ghostly vengeance for misdeeds. Japanese vengeful ghosts are far more powerful after death than they were in life, and are often people who were particularly powerless in life, such as women and servants. Kaidan also frequently involve water as a ghostly element. In Japanese religion, water is a pathway to the underworld and can be seen in the festival of Obon.
Awesome. Yeah, we talked about it in our episode about Japanese horror. I know the title of that episode is J-Horror, that the Japanese like a wet environment for their horror.
Yep.
They like it damp.
They sure do. Think about The Ring.
Yep.
And Dark Water.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, very cool.
So back to the ritual, the overall ritual. The origin of this may have actually been for classes of samurai to test their courage.
Oh.
Can you make it through the 100 scary stories and go into the room and extinguish the lantern and look at yourself? Which is even a means, I know that we've talked about this in the past, I don't know where, but the notion of like looking at your own face in the mirror as a way to sort of like conjure spirits or summon spirits, to watch your own reflection change.
Yeah, it's like a form of scrying.
Yeah, so as the room gets dimmer and dimmer, your reflection is becoming...
It's kind of warping, and also you keep looking at it, it starts to look weird.
Absolutely. I absolutely love this.
Yeah, this is awesome.
So back when this game was popular, again, this is in like the 17th century, it spawned a huge boom in ghost storytelling. This was also right around the time that a new printing technology had been implemented, so it made it possible to spread stories far and wide. So writing Kaidan became like a cottage industry of sharing these like little horror stories and stuff. These days, there have been tons of shows and movies based on this form of storytelling, of putting everybody in a room.
Yeah.
Like it's great fodder for like, if you think of like a horror anthology, everyone's sitting in a room together telling a story.
I don't think I've ever heard of this before.
I've never heard of this before, but it's very much like a campfire tale. Like
it definitely
everyone's
is.
Everyone's sitting around the campfire in Are You Afraid of the Dark and telling a story that gets dramatized each week.
Yep.
Evidently, there was a comic book series called Hungry Ghosts written by Anthony Bourdain.
That's so weird. I just came across this.
Really?
Yeah. This came across my path like this week. I don't remember why, but yes.
Extra weird. Allie has been watching a lot of Anthony Bourdain for the first time in years.
Huh.
I don't know.
Well, you were looking for a comic book to read. I know. Was. You had posted it on Instagram. So maybe this is
maybe this is the time. There is a modern incarnation of this ritual, which is that you are in the room with the candles.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of cuts out a middleman step. Like every time you tell a story, you just blow out one of the candles that's in the room with you, which makes a certain amount of sense. But it also makes me think that like back in the 17th century, did they want the three rooms for a reason?
Right.
Did they need that second room to be empty so that the spirits couldn't travel?
I forgot that it was three rooms. Yeah. What was going on in that third room?
That last room is never like overtly mentioned. I found another like set of instructions for the ritual somewhere, which mentions like make sure there are no weapons anywhere, which I guess if you're in the 17th century that there are weapons abound.
And I guess they're worried that you're going to freak out. Is that
maybe
it?
Yeah, I don't know. Or that spirits can't take up arms.
Huh.
I'm not sure. But like it made me wonder like that empty room must have a purpose.
Yeah.
So maybe the modern incarnation where you're in the room with the candles is riskier.
Right.
Here's what the end is supposed to be for the modern ritual. And this is where it gets back to like the kinds of people that wrote like the elevator game taking over this, you know, 400-year-old form of storytelling. The end. When the final candle is blown out, prepare yourselves.
Okay.
The window will be open. and it's anyone's guess what might come through. It's like they don't tell you anything. They only leave a void for you to
It just fill must it be in. Something scary. I guess that's all we can go with.
Like reading about the historic form of storytelling is so much more interesting than being like, anything might happen.
Yeah,
now.
Right.
Don't turn and take a peek. No, no. Yeah. Like, okay. There's another modern version where you have 10 candles instead of 100, which mm-hmm. is far more manageable.
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of people probably didn't make it to the end of 100.
To be 100 people? Is it that one person goes in and then another person goes in? No, it can be no. any amount of people.
Yeah, any amount yeah. of people. Yep.
10 is much more doable.
Yes, I completely agree. The way that it was mentioned, this is from theghostinmymachine.com.
I love that website.
Yeah.
Yes. And I also use them.
Yeah. I got mm-hmm. a lot of stuff from them this week.
I think they have a book all about rituals and games. I'm going to look it up while you're talking about that.
Oh, very cool.
I'm pretty sure they do.
For the comparison of like modern people being like it's anyone's guess what might come through. They have a source, for the original rules that were theoretically, this was written in 1600 or just after. Mm-hmm. When the final lantern is extinguished, true darkness will descend and spirits may be summoned.
Okay.
It's similarly vague.
Yeah.
Like it also doesn't make a promise of anything, but it's so much more interesting than, and you better buckle up because anything
there's
might happen
something.
Now. Yeah.
So there is a book called Dangerous Games to Play in the Dark that's written by Lucia Peters, who runs theghostinmymachine.com.
Great website.
Yeah.
It was really fun, mm-hmm. like reading through everything on there this week. Here's from the comments section from theghostinmymachine.com. Connor wrote this. It is very interesting. First time I tried this, me and my friends opened a window and a demon came through. Mm. The bad thing is
casual.
The bad thing is we had to kill it, but we did though. But it is some cool stuff. Good for Halloween. What? It is very interesting.
You killed a demon?
It is very interesting. First time I tried this, me and my friends opened a window and a demon came through. The bad thing, we didn't get
yeah,
to that
was
thing
fine.
Yet. That was fine. The bad thing is we had to kill it, but we did though.
We did though.
Not we killed it. Not that we had to kill it, and we did. You know.
Yeah.
We had to kill it, but we did. We did though.
But we did though. That's amazing.
But it is some cool stuff. Good for Halloween. Thanks to Connor.
It's a very casual review
yeah.
with a lot of big events happening in it.
Shout out to Connor.
Don't seem casual.
This week's episode is brought to you by Connor. Demon killer, demon hunter, Connor. My last ritual I'm going to talk to you about is one man hide and seek.
Okay.
Suggested by Stephanos. For this, Kristen, here's what you're going to need. A stuffed doll with limbs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, limbless dolls.
All right. Damn. I guess I'm out.
Yeah.
All my dolls are limbless.
A sack of uncooked rice.
Okay.
A pair of nail clippers, a needle, red thread, a sharp knife or scissors, a bathroom that has a bathtub in it, a cup of salt water, a television, a hiding place, and incense. Here's what you're going to do. First, cut open the doll, remove the stuffing. Fill it with the rice and trim some of your fingernails. Put those in there too.
Okay.
Stitch the doll closed with the red thread. When you're done stitching and you have leftover thread, don't cut the loose leftover thread. Wrap that around and around and around the doll. I had to dig for why you're doing this. So
okay.
This was not part of the ritual. This is my own research to figure out what are
you're
we
cobbling
why?
Together. Yeah.
Why? It's a major question I have is why in all these rituals. So the rice represents the doll's internal organs. Oh. Evidently, there is a superstition in, I don't know where
that
this
story
originated
from. That we're just
full of rice. We're just full of rice. That having a bag of rice for too long might attract ghosts. That is a superstition somewhere.
Hmm.
So the rice is meant to be a spirit bait. So you put that in the doll. The thread, the red thread, represents blood vessels and seals any spirits you may have attracted into the doll.
Okay.
Continuing with the ritual. Fill the bathtub with water. Purify the room with the incense. Then put the TV... Oh, purify your hiding room.
Okay.
The room you want to hide in. Different room.
Okay.
Purify that room with the incense. Then put the TV in your hiding space room, along with a cup of salt water and your sharp-edged tool.
Okay.
Name the doll. Don't give it your own name or the name of someone you know.
Kristen. Duncan.
Duncan. Got it. Okay. Got it. Game on. At 3 a.m., repeat this phrase to the doll 3 times. Kristen is the first it. Kristen is the first it.
What do you mean?
Kristen is the first it. Well, I just don't want to use my name in case something happens.
Wait, so you say your own name, or whoever's playing the thing is Kristen is the first it?
Yeah, whoever you are. I'm using Kristen because I don't want to use me.
I did not... We didn't discuss this. If Duncan comes for me, I'm going to be pissed as hell.
You're going to be a Dunkaroo.
Oh, my God. Great. We already have David. Now we're going to have Duncan after us.
Oh, no. Dear David and dear Duncan.
D&D.
Dear David and damn Duncan. David, Duncan, knock it off. Bring the doll to the bathroom, submerge it in the tub. Turn off all the lights in your house and go to the hiding place. Turn on the TV. Count to 10. Do not turn on any of the lights, lock any of the doors, make any unnecessary noise. Do not leave your house. You are in this until you're done with the ritual. Do you understand?
Oh, my God. I guess I'm already in it, so I have to understand.
Yep. Now, open your eyes, grab your knife and scissors, head back to the bathtub. Take the doll out of the tub and say, I have found you, Duncan. Cut the thread binding the doll. I think that means the loose thread.
Yeah.
Don't cut the stitching.
Yeah.
Cut the loose thread. Cutting the thread implies that you're releasing any of the spirits which may have been attracted to the rice inside the doll, enabling them to theoretically now come after you. That's what you're hiding from for the remainder of the game, ghosts and demons. Just a reminder, I had to look that up on the side. The rest of this is about you hiding until it's done, and then you can relax, which I'm like... From what?
Yeah, right. What's happening?
From Duncan? Why? Why would he follow me now? What are we doing and why? What are we doing and why? So I had to look it up. The spirits were attracted to the rice. You just cut the thread, meaning the spirits are loose.
Right. Oh, man.
That is what it is.
So it's not really one man hide and seek or one person hide and seek because there are a bunch of spirits who are seeking you.
Well, do you consider a spirit like to be a man? A human?
I don't know. You're being pursued by them in this game, so it doesn't seem like it's only a one-sided game.
Yeah, you certainly are. So now, now that you've done all that, say, you are the next it, Duncan.
Oh, okay. So will that make all the spirits go to Duncan?
Well, now Duncan's job is to find you.
Oh.
Right? So put the doll back in the tub, head back to your hiding place, stay as quiet as possible. Here's how you end all of this. Take a large mouthful of the salt water. Don't swallow it. Just hold it in your mouth. They would just have you just be satisfied with that. It's because salt water should theoretically keep you safe from spirits. Salt rings, stuff
okay.
like that.
Okay.
Leave your hiding place, go looking for the doll. Note, the doll may not necessarily be in the bathroom where you left it.
Uh-oh.
Again, just like weird ambiguity. When you find the doll, they just cut right to the end. When you find the doll...
Because you will.
Pour the rest of the salt water from the cup on the doll and then spit the water in your mouth on it too. Repeat this 3 times. I win. I win.
Oh my God.
I win. Now that the game is over, allow the doll to dry, then burn it and discard the remains.
I feel like you're asking for trouble by spitting the water on the doll.
I feel like you just shouldn't play this game if you don't want to be playing it, right?
Yeah.
Like all the
it doesn't seem like there's an upside to it. Like no. The downside is that maybe ghosts and spirits are going to find you and then Lord knows what they'll do with you.
Well, the downside is that you've just spent your night hiding in a little room from a doll you put in the bathtub.
Right.
And when you go out to find it, it's still going to be in the bathtub.
Maybe. They said they weren't sure.
There's no dramatizing there of like, where would it be? What does it want?
I guess that it's like possessed or like a ghost picked it up.
Yes. I sort of looked into other stories of this as well. And it was just people being like, I thought I heard something that was freaky. Like, why are you doing this?
Might have been Duncan coming down the pike.
I know. I don't condone anyone doing these rituals, not because they might summon a demon.
Because they're a waste of time.
I think they might be a waste of time.
Except for that Japanese one.
That is
very cool.
That one is really awesome, and I love that. And even the idea of just sitting in a room with your friends telling scary stories.
Yeah.
And treating it like there's a reverence for the folklore there. Mm-hmm. There's a reverence for people's experiences, the way that it was described, where it's so much less about like, and then... The couple on Lover's Lane, the man with the hook, put his hook in the door. I like that stuff too.
Yeah.
But like the way they describe it is like people's experiences, it was like old townsfolk who said that they've had encounters with the paranormal, tell those stories. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily be things that are keeping you on the edge of your seat.
Right.
They're just like telling stories. They're the tradition of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love that. And it also made me think when we were kids, We lived in Redding, Connecticut.
Yep.
And I told a scary story in the living room. I made everyone turn off the lights.
I know. This is what it made me think of.
Yeah. It's the same. I did this. I did.
Well, kind of.
I was part of this Japanese tradition from the Edo period.
With different scary results.
Yeah, it was true. I sat and I told everyone some scary story. I don't know if I made it up or what. And I had a candle in front of me. And as I got to the stunning crescendo, the final line, I wanted to be dramatic. So I was like, and then the ghost ate them all. And I leaned forward and I cupped my hand around the candle and went to blow out the candle. But my little toot of air caused a little whip effect to the melted wax on the candle. So it whipped around my hand and splashed back into my own face. And I ran screaming through the house to the bathroom, turning on all the lights. And I was convinced, I was like, I'm hideous. I was convinced that I was going to look like Two-Face. I thought that melted wax on your face was like, I've deformed myself. I did this so early. I'm 7. Wow, man.
Oh, my God. It's so funny in hindsight.
I was so upset. I was so terrified. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified.
It had to have felt really hot and scary.
Hot wax on your face isn't great. I did not like it.
I remember that, but I don't remember, you know, what we thought happened or I.
Well, obviously, then I looked in the mirror and I just had wax on my face and I probably picked it off. And I moved on with my life, clearly.
I do remember you getting up and running, though.
You remember this, really?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Parts of this to me, almost like, sometimes when I remember my childhood, it feels like I'm just remembering the last time I told the story.
Oh, me too. Mom and I were talking about this recently. For some reason, we all have this, where I understand that was me, but I don't really remember a lot of
things. We're not, like, part of our own lives.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. There's, like, a separation there.
Mental illness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Well, this is everyone's experience, and we're just more upright about it. I can't really tell.
I don't know.
But there you go. I've been part of this tradition from the Edo period since I was but a boy. And I want to bring it back. I love that.
I do, too. I think it's really, really awesome. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to talk to you about some more of these stories. But first, we want you to hear from our sponsor of this week's show. It is the podcast History Goes Bump. It's an awesome show. It's like one of the earlier podcasts. It's been on for like 6 years, which they're going to tell you in this promo. I don't want to be redundant, but I found it a long time ago and I was so stoked that it was out there. So please listen to this promo and then go check out the show.
Do you like history?
Do you like the paranormal?
Are you a weird kid?
Hi, this is Diane.
And this is Kelly.
We host the History Ghost Bump podcast.
Ghost tours for the theater of the mind.
We combine history and the paranormal in a fun format that also features a moment oddity.
History Goes Bump has been in production for 6 years, and we have a large archive.
If you have a favorite haunt, we've probably covered it. If not, please suggest it to us, and we'll add it to the list.
Check us out at historygoesbump.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Keep it spooky!
Cool. Yeah, go check it out, everybody.
Yeah, it's an awesome, awesome show, and I really think that you'll enjoy it.
Real quick, I don't think that we could step outside ourselves enough to all sit in a room and tell scary stories. Right? Can you imagine being like, all right, now it's my turn? And like, we all have to be quiet and listen while you tell a story?
I guess, no. That doesn't seem that weird.
Really? You think that we could all be like quietly respectful of each other as we go like, and now I will tell a tale, and then go blow out the candle?
Yeah.
Maybe we should do this.
Yeah, we could do that.
We could do
this.
We could definitely do the 10-candle version.
Yes, absolutely.
We could do that on like a stream.
Yeah, I would be totally down for that. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
That would
be very fun.
Yeah.
All right, this show is also brought to you by Guide to the Unknown, which is us. Go to gttupod.com. You're going to find links to everything in our little universe, everything under the sun. You can head to patreon.com/gttupod, where if you back us on the Netherworld Warrior level, starting at $4 a month, you're going to get access to a ton of bonus shows, one of which is going to be coming out this Sunday.
Yes.
We're talking about rituals here and now, rituals that have like traveled their way around the internet and everything. Mm-hmm. But we're actually going to perform a sort of paranormal contact mission on the episode of the Netherworld Dispatch coming out on Sunday.
That's right. We're going to be performing the Estes method, which is a ghost hunting method that we talked about a few episodes back, and we are going to switch places. I'm going to try to talk to spirits. Will's going to try to talk to spirits. And it's all going to be recorded and only on patreon.com/gdtupod. So definitely go check that out. It's the 13th full-length bonus episode that's over there on the Netherworld Dispatch feed.
Yeah, but there's so much more. There's videos and stuff, like 100-plus exclusive posts just for you.
Mm-hmm.
So do that. Follow at GTTUpod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to stay up to date with our stuff. Hit the Facebook group, the Secret Society Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/GTTUpod. You can talk back to us and other people who watch and listen to this show. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
That would be fantastic. And thank you so, so much to everybody who does that and leaves us reviews. Thank you so much to our patrons, because really, you guys are the sponsors of this show in a big, big way. So thank you.
Yeah, without a doubt. You're keeping us alive.
Mm-hmm.
You're clapping.
That's
like
right.
Tinkerbell is keeping us alive.
That's right. All right. So let's talk, William, about light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Yeah.
Did you ever do this?
No.
I don't think that I've ever done this.
Really?
Maybe. I couldn't swear to it, but I certainly don't have like a memory of doing this at a sleepover or whatever.
For sure, the 90s cliche was that girls at a slumber party were doing this all the time.
Right. I don't know that we necessarily were, but it is a cool thing that I was certainly aware of. So what it is, just broad overview, is the idea that, you're right, girls at a slumber party, there'll be one person who's laying down in the middle, and that the other girls use like a couple of fingers and say, light as a feather, stiff as a board, light as a feather, stiff as a board, and are able to like lift the girl into the air means of magic.
I don't think I realized that's what it was.
What did you think was happening?
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
You lift an entire human being?
Yes.
With just like your pinky finger?
Yes. What did you think it was then?
You know what? Now that you ask, I don't know that I really had a thing in mind, but it did occur to me that it was literally levitating.
Yes.
Levitating your friend.
Yes. It was right? Levitating your friend. They do it in The Craft. You've seen The Craft, right?
Yeah, of course I have.
Okay, but in The Craft, she really levitates. She's like floating. They take their hands away and they're like, and then I could be making this up. I feel like she spins in the air. I must be wrong. Well, no, like she's like stationary, like, you know, stiff as a board, but like turns, you know, 360, like a, I hate to say this, but like on a spit.
That is certainly what like magicians do. You know what I'm talking about?
You
like,
know what?
I feel like David Copperfield,
William,
rises in a sheet and then turns like a quarter turn.
I'm thinking about magicians and I'm not kidding. That's exactly what I'm thinking about.
Well, they practice their craft.
That's true. It is a craft. Ryan and I watched some David Copperfield during quarantine, and I feel like that is what I'm picturing.
You were watching David Copperfield?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We watched a special that was very bawdy.
Really?
Yeah. He's like always like hitting on the ladies and stuff. It was like from the 90s. And I was like, oh my God.
Ugh.
Didn't age well. He did, though. He's looking great. I went to his Instagram and I checked out what's going on. He's still making the scene.
He looks like an American Pierce Brosnan to me.
Yeah. Yes.
Crossed with Zoolander.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all pretty good. He's from Fords, New Jersey.
Really?
Yeah. He's son of Fords.
Oh,
just like my husband.
Son of Copperfield. Of the Fords Copperfields? We should watch some Copperfields on.
We've said that Patreon for years.
Yeah,
we really should. Anyway, you're absolutely right. That's not what happens in The Craft, I don't think. I think it's David Copperfield stuff that I'm thinking of. So there are some variations of this that I wasn't familiar with, but they ring a bell to me. I don't remember them being as part of the childhood lore to me. But there are versions of this where rather than just the people around the person who's going to float saying light as a feather, stiff as a board, there's kind of like an intro. So first, the person who's closest to the head of the person is supposed to say, she's looking ill. And then everybody repeats that a few times. She's looking ill. She's looking ill. Then she's looking worse. She's looking worse. She's looking worse. She's dying. She's dying. She's dying. She's dead. She's dead. She's dead. So it's supposed to make it unsettling and scary,
yeah,
adding to the fun of this. But also the idea is that we're maybe somehow lighter in death. And so maybe it can sort of trick the mind into thinking the body is lighter. So somehow we can lift this person.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's that maybe the soul leaving the body is making it lighter or something. But them being dead and that helping the lifting is a theme in these before game rituals.
Interesting.
Because there's another variation where the person being lifted is told a story about their death. So the person at the head of the table is like, William died when he was boating. He was in a kayak. And then another kayak came and it hit William's kayak. And then he died. Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Wow. But,
so again, the idea being that it's scary, it creeps everybody out, and also in death somehow we're lighter. We're symbolically saying this person is dead, so maybe they're going to be a little bit lighter.
Kids doing spooky stuff is wonderful.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. So I didn't do this, but we talked about it on the show before. I did a lot of seances as a child, so I made up for not getting to do this. So after both of those things, then the traditional light as a feather, stiff as a board sort of deal kicks in, where everybody lifts the body only using their fingertips, usually like the first one or two you're only supposed to be using. There's also a version of this, which I didn't know about, that it could be that somebody is sitting in a chair when it's done rather than lying down. And there's also some sort of ritual happening beforehand. Sometimes it's walking around the chair clockwise or counterclockwise, depending on who's doing it. Sometimes it's like people rubbing their hands together, I guess, like walking around the chair.
Weird.
And there could also be a version where people around the sitter extend their hands to the sitter, trying to transfer their energy to the sitter, which I would think would make them heavier.
I know, I was going to say.
Because in the, you know, if the idea is that if they're dead, they become lighter, if we're giving them all our energy, isn't that going to make them denser? But then I thought, well, perhaps it's that it's make them, it makes them more buoyant in some way. I've got all this energy. I feel so good. I'm buoyant.
They're spiritually lighter.
Yeah. Right? They're feeling good. So basically, the ritual part of it is kind of creating a before and after, because before you even start the ritual, you try. So they're just lying there and you try to lift them. You're like, oh, I can't do it. Then everybody goes around and does the thing and then they can do it. So obviously, the ritual aspect of this must have made a difference. So people say that it does work sometimes, but here's the deal. It's probably very, very unlikely. It could be people looking back in hindsight. And also, you're doing this likely when you're a child. Right. So you're going to exaggerate in your mind. But also, it could possibly happen, if the conditions are just right, where the person's weight is perfectly distributed between all these little fingers and they happen to lift at the exact same right moment. So not really going to levitate, but it's that it's the unlikely event that their single fingers can lift up what is probably a very light person. Right, yeah. And then they're going to freak out and be like, oh my God, it's working. So the earliest recorded instance of basically light as a feather, stiff as a board happening is from the late 1600s. The 1600s were a hot time.
I guess so.
For playing a spooky game. So we find out about this from the diary of Samuel Pepys, a British naval administrator. He heard an account of girls playing light as a feather, stiff as a board from his friend, Mr. Brisbane. And he wrote about it in his diaries in the late 1600s.
My old Tucker Brisbane said this to me.
From Mr. Pepys. Or Pepys. It's P-E-P-Y-S. Pepys?
Pepys.
I am Samuel Pepys.
It's like the way Kramer would pronounce that name. You know, like he says Ramirez instead of Ramirez. Pepys.
Pepys. So this is a quote from Mr. Pepys's diary from his interaction with Mr. Brisbane. He says... He says now, Will. William, do you hear me?
Sorry, I'm still just laughing at, like, even, like, Mr. Pepys's diary has, like
Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Yeah, it just sounds like it sucks. You know? Like, you were reading Mr. Pepys's diary? All right.
Cool.
It's like the worst assignment in class.
Okay, here's what Mr. Brisbane said that was written in the Pepys diaries. He saw four little girls, very young ones, all kneeling, each of them upon one knee, and one begun the first line, whispering in the ear of the next, and the second to the third, and the third to the fourth, and she to the first. Then the first begun the second line, and so round quite through, and putting each one finger only to a boy that lay flat upon his back on the ground as if he was dead, at the end of the words, they did, with their four fingers, raise this boy high as they could reach, and he, Mr. Brisbane, being there, and wondering at it, also being afeard to see it, for they would have had him to have bore a part in saying the words, in the room of one of the little girls that was so young that they could hardly make her learn to repeat the words, did, for fear there might be some slight used in it by the boy.
Oh, get to the point, Pepys.
For fear there might be some slight used in... Oh, that was the same thing. Or that the boy might be late, call the cook of the house, a very lusty fellow as Sir G. Carteret's cook, who is very big, and they did raise him in just the same manner. I don't know what I just said.
Yeah, don't call the lusty cook.
I don't think I used the right inflection for that. Also, these words were spelled funny. It was room, R-O-O-M-E, girls with an E between the L and the S, and fear with an E on the end of it. So this is old naval English or something.
Stupid old people couldn't even spell right. They didn't even know modern English. Those dummies.
But here, this is sweet, because Pepys also spoke of the chant that accompanied this performance. It's written in Latin. I'm not going to say the Latin. I'll just say what it is. Here is a dead body, stiff as a stick, cold as marble, light as a spirit. Lift yourself in the name of Jesus Christ.
Oh, God.
So that's what they were whispering to each other around the thing, rather than saying light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Yeah, okay.
Intense.
That got refined over time.
It certainly did. They whittled that down. Yeah. I think they took some good notes.
They tightened it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Pepys needs to learn to kill his darlings.
That's right. So, well, no, Pepys was hearing this from Brisbane, who heard it from the little girlies. Girls with an E.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Okay, so that's it for that.
Okay.
Moving on. Let's talk about something that I learned about just today. I guess I must have heard about it before because it was spoken about in the Parapod podcast, which is no longer with us, right? I don't think it is.
Kind of. I think they just did a movie, like a documentary.
That's right. But even that was like a while ago.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're making new stuff right now, but it's an awesome show that you should check out. It's very
so
cool. It's two British dudes, one who's a major believer, one who's a major skeptic, and it's fantastic. Will and I listened to a whole bunch of it. And during that show, they would always end the show talking about a ritual that could be performed. And there was a website that compiled those rituals, link in the show notes, and I chose one of those to talk about today. So I must have heard about it on the show, but I don't remember it. This is the Lady Spades ritual.
Okay.
So it's somewhat similar to Bloody Mary, but it's a little bit more involved. And this is the one that I found details and instructions about from the Ghost in My Machine website. They said that this originally came from Reddit, from the user Jazzy Fingers. So they posted about it and maybe made it up themselves.
Maybe.
Or it could be a thing going back. So how you do this is that you go into a room with a mirror and you light a candle in front of the mirror. Using red lipstick, you write Lady Spades on the mirror and you hold a Queen of Spades playing card in your hand facing the mirror.
Okay.
You close your eyes, you try to clear your mind, and you say, Lady Spades, appear, out loud 7 times. While your eyes are still closed, you're supposed to visualize Lady Spades, and they tell you what you should see her as looking like. She'll be all in black with black eyes, scaring like a mean, scary smile, not a nice smile, and she's kind of scarred and mangled. You might just hear a woman's voice, laughter, or footsteps, and then you'll know that you have summoned her. So either way, after you've said it 7 times, you can open your eyes and you should see Lady Spades in the mirror with her hands by her sides. If this is the case, you state your wish and you do not break eye contact with Lady Spades. So it's kind of the opposite of the elevator game where you don't want to make eye contact. You want to be fully focusing on her. If she decides to grant the wish, she'll smile and say yes. Then you say, Lady Spades, disappear. You're supposed to wipe her name off of the mirror, turn on the lights, and you burn the Queen of Spades card completely to ash. Your wish will come true soon. So all good. But there's a lot of room for error when playing Lady Spades.
Okay.
If the candle has gone out, if you open your eyes and the card is facing you rather than the mirror, you skip right to Lady Spades disappear and you close it out. Something has gone wrong. If you open your eyes and either of those two things has happened, we're not proceeding. Lady Spades isn't in the mirror.
Right.
Just close it out. But if in the event of any of these things, if you open your eyes and the card is missing altogether, it's not in your hand anymore. If Lady Spades is shown in the mirror, but her hands are pressed against the mirror instead of just at her sides looking at you. If you break eye contact with her or she declines to grant your wish, you need to break that mirror, blow out the candle, burn that card if you have it, if it's not one of the options where it's disappeared, and you need to vacate the premises.
Oh, wow.
For how long? I don't know.
Just forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just got to get out of there.
Why is my mirror broken?
Duncan.
Duncan.
Who was Duncan again? Is that the doll?
The demon doll.
Maybe that's how he became a demon.
Maybe.
Because he wronged Lady Spades, or you know, this thing didn't go right, and then he turned into the demon.
See, that has the smackings of some of the rituals I talked about, where it's like very, it's funny, because I'm also thinking about how, like, in previous shows, I've talked about how much a fan I am of rules.
Yes.
Rules for stories. The rules in these rituals are so tight that they're silly.
Yeah.
And they're for no purpose.
Well, it's weird. They're tight, but they don't tell you for what reason.
Yes. There's like nothing. They're just, they're arbitrary feeling.
Right.
But at least in this story, it's like you might, there's a lot of risk involved, but also you might get a wish granted.
Right.
Like that's
the reason you're doing
it. Yes. That's a great motivator to do all the stuff.
Right. The hope is that you're going to get a wish granted.
Right.
I think with a lot of them, the hope or the whatever is just that you might see something scary and that's fun.
You might end up in another reality.
Right, like Bloody Mary. That's just to see Bloody Mary and get scared. Is there a reason to see Bloody Mary?
No, but it's also not a 15-step process.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. Okay, now we're going to talk about some things that aren't necessarily... they're not at all. They're not like rituals that are going to make a scary thing happen, but they're like macabre childhood games, kind of in the vein of Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board, but without like an otherworldly purpose. But I just wanted to talk about them because they came up when we were doing that Patreon planning session, and a lot of people might have familiarity with them, and they're weird.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the crack an egg on your head game. Let's just call it a game, whatever. So here's how I knew it as a kid. I remember it being... crack an egg on your head, watch the yolk run down, watch the yolk run down, watch the yolk run down. Stab a knife in your back, watch the blood drip down, watch the blood drip down, watch the blood drip down. That was all I really remembered off the top of my head. And while you're doing those things, you're doing this to a friend and touching them. So crack an egg on your head, you kind of like gently bonk your fist on their head, and then you use your fingers and you're tracing down their back. Stab a knife in your back, same deal, it's on their back, and then you're kind of drifting your fingers down their back. And it's really just because it kind of felt good, and it gives you like the chills, basically. So there, I did a little research online, and there are alternate lines, and all of them usually start with a crack an egg on your thing, a crack an egg on your
crack an egg on your thing.
But then they kind of, they have variations that some ring a bell to me and some I didn't really remember. So the user fish fish bird bird cat on Reddit said that after the yolk running down and after the blood dripping down, that you say between each of those, and the chills run up. Yolk runs down and the chills run up, blood drips down, chills run up, and that at the end of that you're supposed to grab their shoulders and say, how do you feel? The how do you feel thing rang a bell to me a little bit, and I think that it may have been from some of these other things. So there was a since deleted user, I don't know their name, who said that there were more lines, and then at the end you would spin the person around, give them a little push, and then ask them what color they saw, and each color meant something.
Oh, okay.
And a user named I Eats a Pizza said they remembered that. So it can be like a regional thing. You know what I mean? Like school by school, region by region.
Like a game of telephone in a way.
Basically. Then the only KJ contributed that they did draw a snake upon your back, two eyes, and paint it black.
Oh.
So I guess you do another little wiggle like a snake, and then maybe two fingers poke like Mo, but on your back. While Fleerza said there's also crisscross applesauce, spiders crawling up your back, big squeeze, cool breeze. And then Masher88 finished the thought by saying that during cool breeze, you blow on your neck, blow on their neck and say, now you've got the shiveries.
Whoa, the shiveries.
Which I kind of remember.
Yeah.
I kind of remember something about like blowing on their neck and them being like, ugh.
I do have a vague recollection of that. Yeah.
Right. So was this the same for you since we grew up in the same area? Like, do you remember just the... crack an egg on your head and the knife in the back, or what?
I only remembered crack an egg on your head.
You don't remember the knife in the back?
No. I didn't remember any of that. And then I was talking to my wife a few months ago, and we got into talking about crack an egg on your head, and she knew the full thing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the Jersey version, I guess.
Right, right.
So she knew it as crack an egg on your head, let the yolk run down. Crack an egg on your head, let the yolk run down. Stab a knife in your back, let the blood trickle down. Stab a knife in your back,
so
let the blood trickle down. Put needles in your back. let the blood trickle down. And so you put all 10 fingers, you just lightly jab at their back, let the blood trickle down.
I saw that too.
And then there was one, you put your hands on the person's shoulders and you sort of wobble them around and go, people dying.
Okay, that's next.
Children crying. And then something about being high up on a building and push.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the next one. This is kind of the concentrate game, I have very, very vague recollection of. I basically just remember them saying babies crying, people dying, concentrate, concentrate, but I don't remember the rest of it. So from that, I found this and it kind of rang a bell. Some people do this as its own thing. Some people are doing it together with Crack an Egg on Your Head, where the lines kind of alternate. But here is what rang like the closest bell for me. And this is from a 2007 Live Journal comment from Alt Eloquent. They wrote out, concentrate, concentrate. People are dying. Children are crying. Concentrate. And you're smacking their back in time to the words. Then you do this like visualization thing, like you're climbing up the Empire State Building. So you take the person by the, you're behind the person, you take them by the shoulders, and you're like, you're walking up these stairs, and you're holding your shoulders and shaking them like a person would be moving as they're walking upstairs. You get to the top and you say, you hear three steps, you snap left, right, left in their ears. You turn around and no one is there. You hear two steps. No one's there. You hear one step. And then in this thing, I don't remember this at all, like I said. then you hear a voice say, you killed my brother. Now you must pay. And shove them forward a little bit.
Okay.
Then you tell them to open their eyes, look at the palm of their hand, and see what color is there. And that translates to like a color coding thing that will tell them how they'll die.
Whoa.
Kids are so weird.
Yeah.
So another one of these that I said before was like, you pick a color that you said or whatever. But this takes it a little bit further. And here is what I found for the explanations of the colors. Red means they're going to be stabbed. Blue means they'll drown in water. Yellow means they'll be poisoned. Orange means they will burn to death in a fire. Green means they will fall from a height and die on grass. Purple means they will suffocate. Brown means they will be buried alive. Gray means they will die of a disease in hospital. That's been a British person.
Yeah.
White means they will die of old age and go to heaven. Black means they will die of old age and go to hell.
Whoa.
So these are kids playing these things, and it's kind of grisly because the color coding like directly relates to what the thing is. So red means they're gonna be stabbed, there's blood, blue water, yeah. Blue water. Purple means they'll suffocate. I guess it's your face,
yeah,
when you suffocate. Brown means you're buried alive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little kid thought that goes into this stuff, and kids are sick puppies.
They are. It's sort of funny though,
mm-hmm.
to imagine kids talking to each other and being like, you're going to die. You're going to get eaten by a ghost and stuff. And it's like no risk involved whatsoever for them, you know, except for their imagination.
I know. I wonder if this carries on today. Like, are little kids doing this? Is your future daughter who's being born in February going to do this?
I'm very excited to find out.
Like, is she going to come home from school and tell you about this game? Like,
I've got a few years before I find out.
I know.
But I've always been fascinated by little kids saying that they saw a ghost and stuff like that. Like, I really wonder if she's going to have that sort of thing.
She's going to have the sight.
You know, Sean Chatfield on Mega 64 he told a story on one of their podcasts at some point that his kid said that they had a nightmare. It was like in the middle of the night. He like heard the kid moving around. I don't know. Checked on him. And the kid was like, yeah, I saw somebody out my window. And Sean was like, oh, it's okay. Just calm down. It was probably a nightmare. Just go back to sleep. He's like, will you check, Dad? He was like, yeah, I'll check. And then the second the kid went to sleep, he was like, oh, my God. I have to go check to see if there's someone at the window. He's like, oh, like, I'm the dad. Like, I'm the authority here. Right. So I now have to go walk and check this thing. And I heard him tell that story years ago. It's been years. I've thought someday I will be on the bad side of this stuff and be like, I have to like look under the bed and like I'm 33. I still will freak myself out if I'm taking the garbage down the driveway.
Yes!
Like I still will do that stuff. I still will imagine hands reaching out to grab my feet as I come up the basement steps. I still do that. When my daughter says something to me and asks me to check her closet or like I have to go do something alone to confirm that we're all safe, It's going to be horrible.
Like, I know.
I'll do it.
That's going to be so scary.
It is. But then the upside of the spooky kid stuff is that maybe you shall have a sleepover. Oh, in a future where we have
right
people around and you can have sleepovers and stuff. And like maybe I'll hear like her and her friends being like,
light as a feather, stiff as a
bird. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Here lies baby. I'm not saying the name. Here lies kid. And like, there's like five pretending that like one of them is dead. Like, all right, party on, kids. Yeah. Right on.
A proud legacy.
Absolutely. It's very exciting.
It's awesome. So we originally for this episode, we obviously didn't end up doing it. We wanted to do one of these rituals, but we realized that they were either really, really involved or be very boring to listen to. It's really just kind of a you had to be there thing.
I don't live in a building with 10 floors and an elevator. I don't have 100 candles sitting around.
Or there were things where it was like you had to go out into the woods and we're just not going to do that tonight. But I was freaking myself out a little bit reading them where I was like, ooh, I'd be a little bit scared if I was doing this. It's so fun.
I know. Some of them, I will say, like, even the silly stuff that, like, I've sort of, like, you know, pulled apart stuff like the elevator game. But even watching some YouTubers that are, like, a bunch of, like, bros being like, oh, all right, well, we all did it together. Now we all have to do it one by one alone.
Yeah.
And you see them all with their cameras go in and stuff to shoot it. And I'm like, but it's so imaginative and fun.
Yes, it completely is.
It's fun and it's creepy. And I really was like, should we just go somewhere right now and try to find an elevator? But it's also COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to some building and pushing elevator buttons right now.
Not touching buttons at this moment. Mm-mm. Not in this climate.
No, thank you. Buttons in this climate?
Absolutely not.
No. But yeah, once again, we will this Sunday on a new episode of the Netherworld Dispatch be doing not quite a ritual, although from a certain perspective, it is a sort of modern method for contacting the spirit world.
And also, you know, there might be a little ritual beforehand because I think similar to the bonus episode where we used a Ouija board and I had us kind of do like a little guided meditation for us to get in like the headspace.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that.
Okay.
You know, just like, okay, we're open to spirits. Our portals are open. So maybe there'll be like a little ritual.
Yeah. All right. Sure. I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, I will say in the stuff that I wrote for it, I did write some things with the mindset of like, let's be respectful to the spirit world if it exists.
Yes.
Once again, I'm undecided.
I hope it's all respectful to the spirit world.
Yes.
Okay.
But so you can all watch as Kristen and I try to contact spirits with the aid of modern technology this Sunday.
That's
on the 13th episode of the Netherworld Dispatch. Only available to Netherworld Warriors. It's the $4 or up tier on patreon.com/talkbomb. And so I hope that you will all enjoy that. Maybe we will do like a ritual, like one of these someday.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be fun to do.
I could also see us doing another episode about other rituals.
There's so many of them.
Even when they're lame, really cool I enjoy ones. Reading them and seeing what people are getting all like excited about. Like it's kind of, it's fun, you know?
Absolutely.
One thing I want to call out just to sort of wrap up the conversation in a way, I have seen many people rope in the very sad Eliza Lamb story into the elevator game, which was like a story of a young woman. There's footage of her just prior to her death in an elevator. People refer to it as behaving strangely. I actually did a podcast a million years ago, like within the year that footage was released, watching and be like, for the first time learning about it on a show and being like, oh my God, what is happening?
Yeah.
But now it's been 7 years of people talking and like theorizing about Eliza Lamb's death. And it's like, no, she's not part of the elevator game.
No.
So I still saw that in some of my research.
I'm not surprised.
I know. I think it's just part, like people love to... It's the power of imagination and sort of like, I don't know, misrepresenting things too.
And
the power
also
of misrepresentation.
It's such a mystery in a lot of ways, like what exactly happened with her. And it was in an elevator, so you could fill in that blank, even though it's obviously not, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there you go, everybody.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of another episode of Guide to the Unknown.
That's right. We hope you enjoyed it. Definitely go to gttupod.com. That's a hub for everything that we have out there. Patreon, merch, you know, everything.
Yeah, everything.
A lot of stuff.
You can also follow us online if you'd like to talk to us directly.
That's right. I'm at Chillin' Kristen.
And I am at The Myth Traveler. So thank you so much for enjoying these, I don't know, spooky rituals and games with us.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week to talk about more terrifying stuff. But until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the Netherworld. Go away.
And now we know how to get there.
That's right.
You just go to the key floors on an elevator.
We're all set.
It really is like a cheat code.
Yeah. No, it is. It's definitely up, up, down, down, left, right, BA start.
And now I'm in hell.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrate.